This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Welcome to the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast with your hosts, Kyle Borgannoni and Matthew Betts.
Well, hello there. Welcome in to the Super Bowl, the big game edition of the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast. It's Friday, February 11th, and I'm here, as always, with my buddy Matthew Betts. Betts, you getting hyped this weekend?
Dude, this is it, man. This is the end, officially, kind of sad, actually, of the 2021-2022 DFS season, but an incredible matchup between the Rams and the Bengals on tap. Very excited to break it down today, and of course, you know, we're talking DFS, we're talking player props, so that always gets me excited.
I was trying to think of the best way to describe, like, how I feel about our listeners. You know, they've gone with us this year. Maybe you've kind of had some moments where you're like, hey, DFS didn't go so well. You stayed with the process. You're part of the DFS pass. You're part of the Discord channel. I feel like they're graduating, Betts. Like, I feel like we need to play some type of graduation music and let these ones know that they're probably graduating. You know, that kind of promotion from 5th grade to 6th grade is kind of where we're at with our crew.
That's a big deal for sure. You know, those are awkward times in your life. You're on the new, bigger and better things, more awkward things for sure at that stage of life. But yeah, man, I think our listeners have learned a lot this year, hopefully, and just had a ton of fun along the way, which is honestly what I care about the most with you guys, is giving you good advice, kind of showing you the ropes on how to do this thing and let you take it from there. And I think our listeners have done well this season, and we've seen a lot of success from, you know, people that listen to us in Discord, on social media, that sort of thing. So I'm excited to finish strong here for this season and then, you know, run it back again this year.
I don't know how you were running things, but I was pretty cool in 4th, 5th grade. Like, those were my prime years, and I was kind of actually going downhill ever since. So for our listeners,
peaked in 5th grade.
Dude, I really did. I was a pretty cool kid in 4th, 5th grade, and then middle school hit me. So for those of you that are saying, hey, is this the end? Is this kind of like I go on to my new school and I don't see my old friends anymore? No, Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast, we're still going to be a thing. We take a month break because really there's no DFS for you to be playing at all in terms of NFL. You can hit up Betts for his NHL takes if you'd like. We're in the NBA streets as well. But we take a break until March 18th, and I just kind of wanted to give an overview of what the offseason looks like, because for a lot of people, they want it on the action, they want it on conversation. And really, there's so much to talk about. Like, some of my favorite episodes were what we did last year in the offseason. So quick rundown: in March, when we come back, we talk about what it means just to predict and just overall strategies of forecasting. Because at that point for the NFL season, you have a lot to work with free agency, but we're still talking about what's going to happen, how teams shape up. And then in April, we talk about the NFL draft from a prop betting perspective, from team perspective. That's a ton of fun. I mean, we have a number of different shows that we go to for that. In May, we talk about projections, and that was last year when you and I were all about our Falcons. If you sweated with us to 7 wins, it's like it never happened, right? We got our money back?
Somehow. Somehow, some way, it worked out. Yeah, that was a fun sweat. Hopefully everyone was with us on that one. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about those team projections and win totals again.
And then we call it the summer of best ball. So June and July is completely devoted to best ball, where Betts and I talk about strategies. We talk about the best way to approach different positions, different values. And if you get in on the Ultimate Draft Kit Plus, you get some of that early access content, including our best ball primer, which you and I put a ton of content, a ton of time and energy into. So that's the summer. And then we go right back to DFS, DFS strategy, season-long bets in August leading into September. So what I just explained, Betts, any one of those that really stands out to you that you would say, hey, listeners, stick around. I want to hang out with you.
I feel like the summer, man. I mean, that's what we're made for, right? We always joke about it, like mowing the lawn, you know, you're doing your chores around the house. That's what we're here for. And the best ball shows, I think, are a lot of fun. Like the one that we did last year talking about the live draft that we did on the show was a ton of fun. The best ball primer in the DFS pass was new this past year. I loved it. I think we can make it even better, honestly, Kyle, this year. So hopefully we can do that for our listeners. And those episodes are just so much fun because the thing about the summer that's great is no matter what your take is, like no one can tell you that you're wrong, right? So last year I wasted so much money being like Trey Lance is the answer. Trey Sermon is the answer to these Niners making a huge run. And they did, but it was the wrong players. So I just love that because you get to kind of plant your flag on your guys and kind of go after it that way. So tons of fun that summer. But yeah, man, I mean, these offseason episodes I think are really valuable. And I feel like last year was our first time doing that where we kind of went all year. And I really felt prepared kind of for the NFL season and from a DFS perspective for sure. So love the summer episodes, no doubt.
No, I love those episodes. I mean, a lot of players that you and I joke about during the year, like we talked about Anthony Firkser probably a little too much that, you know, during the summer. And then we faded him. I remember pounding the table for Michael Pittman Jr. And in best ball, that felt really good getting him as like your fifth or sixth wide receiver. So yeah, those shows are super fun. I'll also just add, in April and May, dude, it's great to talk about teams and what they're going to do because the NFL draft is a giant puzzle, right? Like it's, you're figuring out if this player is going to go here, how does that affect the rest of the draft? And so that's a lot of fun if you want to stick with us. I mean, everyone's hyped for the NFL in April and then the summer just kind of builds and builds and builds. So make sure you stay with us. We will take a break once again for a month. I have some weddings coming up. We've got some family stuff. We're taking just a month break, but we're going to be right back in your podcast feed and we're happy to be with you. But we're here to talk about one thing and that's this game. So let's just get into it.
Straight cash, homie.
I hit that drop for a reason, because if there's ever a chance for you to make some big cash, it's this weekend in the Super Bowl. And you and I have a number of different props. We have a number of different things on the line. Our whole company, we'll get to this, has one prop specifically that people have all been in on. So if there's ever a week where you got some cash you want to throw around, this is the week we want to do it. But let's start off previewing the game. I feel like you've done an awesome job in our DFS pass looking at this from a Vegas perspective and kind of seeing the tendencies of each team. So I'll quickly set us up and then we'll get in the conversation of Bengals and Rams. Rams are currently 4-point favorites. This line has moved a little bit. It was at 4.5. It's now down to 4. And it's at 49, and that's kind of jumped from 50 down to 48.5, and now it's kind of back up to 49. So just based on the line movement, how would you say that, where's the money coming in on this game?
Yeah, it seems like everyone is in on the under. I mean, 82% of the cash right now is on the under. Just 47% of the tickets, though, are on that bet. So for people that aren't familiar with kind of what that means, basically it means there's not the majority of people placing wagers on that, but the people that are putting big time money on it, aka Kyle, you know, Brooks, everyone, everyone here in the brand. But there's lots of cash on the under. And I think we saw that initially, right? It came out at 50. It immediately got bet down to 49, 48.5. And then now it's back up a little bit with more casual people putting money on the over. So it seems really efficient, I think, at this point. But we both took an early stance last week on the show kind of saying we feel the under is kind of the right play here. If you're kind of looking at that from a perspective of how you would approach the game script. So I definitely lean under for sure. And I know you do too, Kyle.
Yeah, we'll be the guys at the draft party that are rooting against fun. That's yep. What we're going for.
Big field goal guys over here.
Oh, that is very true. I think we have correlated our convictions quite well when we get to our props. It's like, okay, if we really believe in the under, then these things can also happen. I mean, we could hedge our bets if we wanted to, but that's not how we're playing this. But the under is attractive because there are multiple paths to these teams just kind of dragging it out. Like we've seen that with the Rams. We saw that in the NFC Championship game, right? 20-17, it felt like a slog in the second half just to see that game even hit 37 points. So Yeah, I like right now the under. But in terms of these teams and what they've done, how against the spread, what has it been like?
Yeah, for Cincy, they've been red hot over the last 6 weeks. Against the spread, they're 6-0. And on the season, when they are more than a field goal underdog, they're also 6-0 against the spread. Again, the current spread right now, four. Some books have it 4.5. So I think that's kind of a popular take, is that most people think this game is going to stay close. The Bengals may not win it, but they can definitely hang in, I think, is the general consensus take on this one. And then you look at the Rams, you know, they've been kind of even against the spread recently as well. But in terms of over-under, the Rams have been 3-3 in the last six. Four of Cincy's last six games have hit the under. So again, it kind of leans to that trend. But I definitely think a close game is definitely possible in this spot.
That stat you gave about them being 6-0 against the spread when they're more than a field goal underdog, like, that's not repeatable long term. Like, there's a reason why you're an underdog, and there's a reason why Vegas, you know, this year, I'm sure they've lost a ton of money on Bengals bets of people saying, hey, they're long shots. So I think just that in general, I mean, that doesn't actually affect the game, but that stat stands out to me as not repeatable long term. But we're going to talk about these players, and just keep in mind, like, we're talking about one game. If you're playing on DraftKings, there's clearly a different way you have to play, right? There's a bigger discrepancy in the salaries. You actually have to pay up if you want someone to be your captain. On FanDuel, you and I would have a completely different conversation. So we're going to gear most of ours to DraftKings. They're our sponsor. It's where a majority of listeners play, but I personally play on FanDuel as well. I know you do. And so we'll talk about that, and kind of, I'll give you a couple of specific lineups that I've actually made on FanDuel where, hey, you just kind of play the good players if they fit in your salaries. Like, you're not thinking as much in the same way. So let's talk about the quarterbacks first, because they're pretty much going to be among the top three most popular captains, right? It's probably going to be Kupp, Joe Burrow, and Stafford. And it makes sense when you look at these offenses and the way that we can project them. So let's start off with Burrow, because he's your boy, and I'm warming up to the idea of using him. I'm clearly using him in some lineups, but how are you approaching Burrow, let's just say, if you are using him as captain?
Yeah, I think before we even talk about that, just for listeners that aren't kind of aware of Showdown, maybe you're just diving in because you're like, I love DFS, but I don't play Showdown. But I mean, there's one game, so I have to this week. About 97% of winning lineups have at least one quarterback in their lineup at somewhere in there, whether it's captain or flex. So I think the conversation is you're playing at least one of these guys, either as flex or captain. And really, if you're not playing at least one of them, you're probably getting too cute. So I think I'm going to have one quarterback in every lineup. As far as how I'm approaching Joe Burrow, if you are going with him as captain, I think what you're telling yourself is that Ja'Marr Chase isn't separating from the other Bengals the way he can. You know, we've seen the 203 games or the 150 in two games, where on those sort of situations when the upside's massive, he is separating in a way where he's the optimal captain from the Bengals. In those spots where Joe Burrow is the captain, presumably you're saying it gets spread out more. So I think what I'm telling myself is, because he's not really a rushing quarterback, I mean, he can run, obviously we've seen that, and we'll talk about that at the end of the show, spoiler alert. But when he's hitting his ceiling, he's spreading the ball out to multiple pass catchers. So I think if you're playing him, you're playing him captain with, I think, a minimum, in my opinion, of two pass catchers to stack him with.
Yeah, I have a Burrow lineup right in front of me, him as captain, and I did the same thing you said. I said, you know what, Chase, when he goes off, he's the optimal captain of this Bengals lineup because the way that PPR scoring works and, you know, 100-yard bonus, all those things. So I built a lineup where Burrow's my captain, and I have four total Bengals, so the 4-2 kind of builds that we like. And I put in Higgins, I put in Mixon, and then I added in a cheapy Mitchell Wilcox. But it still allowed me to get a couple of studs. I have Kupp in that lineup. But basically what I'm saying with Burrow is I probably need at least two pass catchers. And then maybe if you want to mix in a weirdo, you know, a McPherson, Bengals defense, my boy Mitchell Wilcox. We'll talk about him more later.
I love that you called that group the weirdos. Mix in a weirdo right at the end of your lineup, you know, someone that you have zero confidence in, but you gotta play him. You know, that's how it goes.
Hey, it's one game. Anything can happen. And honestly, if I'm playing a single entry, like, I'm going to get weird. I don't care. It's the end of the season. I got to mix in somebody that differentiates myself from the group. So we like Burrow in the double stacking sense, and our early stance is to kind of be lower on Chase. Why do you feel that way? I mean, you and I have kind of collectively come to that agreement like separately. We kind of were talking this out this week, like, do you feel this way? But we're a little bit lower on Chase. We're still going to be playing him in lineups. But why would we be lower on a player that could break the game open?
Yeah, this is not easy to do or say. I mean, it's just terrifying when you tell people, like, I'm going to be underweight on Chase. And I put that out actually on social media on, I think it was wildcard weekend. I said, I'm going to be underweight on Chase. And then, like, the game plan was, like, slants for Jamar Chase and end arounds for Jamar Chase and screens. So it can be, he can bury you. We know that. But my rationale for kind of being underweight here is that we know of the Cincy pass catchers right now, early in the week, he projects to be the most popular captain play of all the pass catchers. So talking about Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and the tight ends. Anytime that we know that's going to happen, of course, it could work out, you know, for sure. And I'll have some exposure, but I think I want to be underweight because of the fact that you're getting different by not playing him there. And we know that Jamar Chase has just killed man coverage all year. I mean, putting, like, what is it, like 3.5 yards per route run almost in man coverage? That is just, that's off the charts, not repeatable, insane how good that is. Like in zone coverage, he's down in the mid twos. I think it's 2.48, I saw 2.48 yards per route run in those situations. The Rams play a ton of zone coverage on defense and a lot of cover two high looks. So they're designing their defense to try to take away those deep plays. Now, don't hear what we're not saying. Like, Jamar Chase can beat any coverage, of course. But I think when you're looking at how this game sets up, I think it's more of a T. Higgins game personally than a Jamar Chase situation. So I'll have, if I'm running like 150 lineups, I may have, you know, 15 lineups that have Chase as captain. I'm not going full fade, but I'm definitely going to be underweight relative to the field.
Yes, it's funny how T. Higgins kind of has popped up all year as a player that we like, that's projected well. I remember getting questions.
He's burned us over and over again.
He's had some big games, right? Like, he's had a couple of big games that we were on, but I remember people asking us, like, why do you guys keep talking about Chase? And it's really just salary. Like, they haven't adjusted his salary the entire year. He's $2,800 cheaper than Chase. So it's kind of a big deal when you think about pricing wise and you know how we're using him. And I think this is a chance to basically make a stance and say, I'm going to be more on the Higgins side. And even with his zone coverage, what are your thoughts on Tyler Boyd? I understand that he doesn't project well from like a ceiling outcome, but we're only looking at one game here. And let's say he catches 5 balls and, you know, he's not a great bet to get in the end zone, but, you know, a 5 for 50 type of game could matter a lot at his price.
Yeah, of the lineups I'm going to play, again, if I'm running 150, I'm not going to play any Tyler Boyd captain. I think I'm just okay that if that happens, like, I'll take the L. We just haven't seen the ceiling from him enough to separate. But along the same lines, as a flex play, I think he's very interesting, especially if you're playing, you know, a Burrow captain or you're trying to go underweight Chase and try to get exposure to the Cincy passing attack, you know, in game scripts where they're trailing and you're not playing Chase. I think Tyler Boyd is phenomenal leverage. He's also, I think, a good play against this matchup. You know, you talk about the zone coverage that we just said for the Rams. Tyler Boyd is the only wide receiver for Cincy whose yards per route run actually get better against zone coverage. And let's throw in the fact that CJ Uzomah may be out there at less than 100% or not play. We're not sure yet. So I think that would definitely help Tyler Boyd's outlook because he's running in his routes, you know, the same areas of the field as CJ Uzomah. So I kind of like Tyler Boyd. Again, flex play only for me. Just haven't seen enough ceiling, but I think he does have a pretty solid floor.
Yeah, on FanDuel, I wrote him up as a tournament differentiator. He's 8,500 there on FanDuel, but I was doing some box score watching. There are 3 games this year where he was their leading wide receiver yardage-wise. So don't think that it can't happen, right? Like, we would clearly project Chase and Higgins to be the dudes, but Boyd's done it. And over the final 8 games of the year, the Rams allowed the 6th most fantasy points to slot wide receivers. So if there is an area that you and I like, that's it. So use him as a tournament differentiator, but the ceiling, like, I mean, is there any way that you could see an outcome of him going over 80 yards?
Missed tackle, breaks a long one. I mean,
something
maybe.
Fluky.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so speaking of the pass catchers, like, that's what you want to do with Burrow. If you're playing him, you're probably double stacking him. But let's talk about Mixon, because for a while, you and I had preached, and I had, you know, kept pounding the table saying Mixon and Burrow were negatively correlated. And over the course of the end of the year, it changed, and it changed in a way where we have to kind of take notice of it. Like, Mixon's been getting passing work in a way that's like, okay, I can't fade him. Like, he's averaged 5 targets per game in the playoffs. He's getting 17 carries. I mean, 20 touches feels almost pretty safe to project for him. So how are you handling him if, let's say, you are using Burrow as a captain? Are you mixing him in?
I don't think I'm going to in those scenarios. Now, with that being said, volume is the biggest predictor of success, and we know this, for the running back position in fantasy. And I agree. I think he's going to see a ton of it based off what he's done recently. And I think there's paths to Joe Mixon having a great day in this game. You know, he's a contrarian captain selection. He's definitely going to be less than Cooper Kupp, than Ja'Marr Chase, than I think the quarterbacks maybe even. So he can come in like fourth or fifth on the list in popularity. And I think in game scripts where you want to be contrarian and say, I know Vegas is telling us the Rams are favored to win this game, but let's say that for some reason something goes south and the Bengals are up, you know, 10 points in the second half. I think in those game scripts, Joe Mixon at captain is really interesting because, like you said, he'll get passing down work on base sets. So first down, second down, he'll get that. And then he's also going to be the guy that's locked in on carries around the goal line and really getting a ton of work on the ground. So I'm not going to have him as my highest exposure captain for sure, but I think he is an interesting contrarian approach for sure on the slate.
All right, and then quickly, let's talk about the other two running backs for the Bengals before we move over to the Rams. Samaje Perine is at $2,400. Chris Evans is $400 on DraftKings. So those two, if you're playing them, I'm assuming you're not playing Mixon in your lineup. You're either saying there might be an injury or something fluky, like last week where we saw, or 2 weeks ago, we saw Perine catch that touchdown. Evans does play some special teams, so if you really want to get weird and mix him in with DST, that's makes sense, but he's also just so cheap, we can't really project anything. So are those two guys just dart throws, and if you're not playing Mixon?
I mean, I have literally nothing to add on Chris Evans. Like you're saying a prayer that he just kind of falls in the end zone somehow. So I probably won't be playing much of or any of him. And then with Samaje Perine, it's just really challenging because if you took the salary pricing on DraftKings out of the equation, you'd say, okay, like this is great. We got a third down back potentially. You know, if you're playing game scripts where you're fading Mixon because you think the Bengals are going to be playing from behind the entire game, you want to stack him with Burrow. It makes all the sense in the world. But the issue is on this slate, the pricing is insanely efficient. There are no good cheap plays. And he is like the only one. So I'm almost kind of worried that he just becomes super popular. You know, we saw that 41-yard reception last week for the touchdown 2 weeks ago. I kind of want to be underweight on Samaje Perine. His box scores are, you know, there's other ones out there where he's done nothing. So if the field is going to try to jam him in as the cheap play, I think a contrarian approach just from a roster construction standpoint in terms of how you spend your salary is trying to go with more of a balanced build rather than going, you know, true stars and scrubs, which I think a lot of people are going to try to do.
Now, that's a great point because $2,400 is going to fit in a lot of lineups. And if you're not playing Mixon, you're, like you mentioned, you're playing Burrow, you're probably playing two pass catchers, and then Perine saying they're coming back and I need that. So I like that take.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin Underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. Save 20% at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
There's a tight end issue, though, in this game. That's where I'm finding like an issue in roster construction because the two tight ends are hurt, right? Uzama and Higbee. And we don't know what's going on. It's like, can I play a cheaper player? Like, Drew Sample's $4,200, and he's not good. And, I mean, he could catch a touchdown. I can't argue.
How do you really
that.
Feel, Kyle? Jeez.
Drew Sample is not NFL worthy. He was a second-round pick, by the way. Anyway.
Was he really?
He really was, out of Washington.
Good for Drew.
Yeah, good nice for job, him. Drew. I'm glad he's not going to get a second contract in the NFL.
So mean.
He probably will. So what are we doing with them? And I mentioned this player earlier, Mitchell Wilcox. He's the backup tight end. He's $200. If he was $1,000, I wouldn't even be talking about it. But $200, you can really get a different lineup. Hope he catches a red zone touchdown. It's a prayer in a large field. But interested in either of those two guys, and what do you think the field's going to do?
Well, I think this all comes down to just CJ Uzoma's status, right? I mean, had the MCL sprain, in the conference championship. Actually was on crutches afterwards, which is not super normal for kind of a traditional MCL sprain. I know he insists he's playing. He's not going to miss the most important game of his life. And I believe he'll be out there. But it's like, at what capacity is he going to be out there? 80%, 70%? Like, we just don't know. And it's pretty early on the normal timeline for healing for these MCL sprains. So I don't think he's going to be 100% out there. So that kind of begs the question is, like, if he is out there, is he going to run as many routes as usual? Does that make Drew Sample run more routes? If he's not out there, he's inactive, Drew Sample is going to be the starter, and that's going to be the easiest fade on the slate. I just don't want to play a guy who you're relying on to catch a touchdown at 4,200. It's not like he's 200 bucks or, you know, 1,000. He's 4,200. It's expensive for a guy whose ceiling is like 3 for 25 and a touchdown and like the 90th percentile outcome, right? Like, it's just, it's hard to see a path. So I think people will try to jam Drew Sample in their lineup if CJ Uzomah is out. I will be doing the exact opposite.
It's interesting because Uzomah is not under contract for 2022. So like, this is literally like, I mean, kind of a career defining thing. Like, hey, do you want to heal up and get another contract? Because before the injury, he would have gotten another nice size contract. Like, he was pretty good this year, pretty good after the catch, even more dependable in the playoffs. So just interesting. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a place where you have to wait until we see where the inactives are. And if he is active, Uzomah, that's going to drive down some of the roster percentage. And I don't know. I'm just not really interested in those tight ends at all. We do get to talk about defense and kickers, though. It's not something we do. So let's talk about Cincinnati. McPherson's going to be popular from just like a media narrative standpoint, which doesn't happen with kickers, people. Trust me, I've tried. People don't care. But people care about McPherson, and they kind of like the narrative that's spun is the Bengals stall out, and McPherson comes, and he's pretty much automatic. And in the fourth quarter, they're probably going to use him. So at 4K on DK, what do we need him to do to be a valuable flex?
Well, I think it just depends on how the game script goes, right? Like if the over hits, things get nutty, you know, we end up with like a 35 to 28 game or something like that. Like, Evan McPherson probably isn't getting there because he's getting there mostly on extra points. But if the under comes in, this game finishes somewhere 20 to 17 or something, like, he's probably going to be a part of winning lineups. So I think you just correlate that with how you think the game script goes. It's really tricky. I was running some kind of optimal lineups just based off projections before the show. And what the optimizers are going to want you to do is to actually play both kickers in the same lineup. So I think if you just set a rule and say, I only want one kicker in this one, unless the game ends up like that Patriots Super Bowl from a few years ago where it was like 13-3 or something. In those situations, double kicker is probably going to win it for you. I'm going to probably try to avoid that and just go with one. So yeah, he's going to be popular. I'm going to play some of him, but I definitely think like he's a tough fade because when you look at around those spots, like we just talked about it, Drew Sample, 4,200, and McPherson, 4,000. Like, it's easy to play him over those types of guys. So I do think he's going to be popular, but I kind of feel like it's for good reason. We're both on the prop for him to hit 2 field goals. So I think I'm going to ride with it.
Dude, major spoiler. That was going to be the most important part of the show.
No, that was the headline of last week's show, man. I know that already.
I mean, come on. If you could just click, go back to last week's episode, we'll talk about that. And the week before, like, we've literally talked about this prop for 4 weeks straight. The Cincinnati defense, you know, in terms of getting sacks, it's possible. I mean, Stafford also tied for the league in interceptions. He led the league in pick sixes. So for big plays, it's on the table. Like, normally I would just say, don't even worry about Cincinnati defense, but I can't really give you much advice other than mixing them in. And if you're going to do that, it's taking away from somebody who's scoring for the Bengals. Like, that's what you're hoping for if you have a Cincinnati defense, is you're hoping for either an under situation where they rack up sacks or a defensive touchdown. And those are impossible to project. So any last thoughts on the Cincy side?
Just one thing from like a roster construction strategy standpoint is we talked about this a little bit on the overview show last week, saying we know a lot of people are going to play 3-3 lineups. So 3 Bengals, 3 Rams. If you want to get contrarian and say, listen, Vegas is wrong this week. The Bengals come out and they win, you know, 24-3 or something like that, which isn't normally what you would project, but things can get weird in one game sample. in the games where you're building a 5-1 lineup of Bengals players, the Cincinnati defense should be in your lineup as a flex. The top 10% of outcomes in these situations for showdown, those lineups have the defense on the, they call it an onslaught build with 5-1. So if you're playing that to get different, and I'm going to have a couple of those lineups, Cincinnati defense is going to be in there as a flex.
For sure. So you and I both, spoiler alert, like we like the Rams, but I'm going to be building lineups where the Bengals just throttle them. Like where the offense just moves, and in that situation, you can see a scenario where the Bengals hold their line. You know, let's say the Rams score, you know, 10 points or fewer. Like it's totally possible to see that kind of outcome. All right, Rams side, let's talk about your boy, Matty Snapback. He's hard to project because you think that 250-2 is just a given because of his skill set. There are games this year where he just imploded, and they were supposed to be in plus matchups. Like, you remember when we talked about them against Baltimore, them against Minnesota? Like, those are supposed to be games where Matthew Stafford was like a cash play. I think we played him in cash one of those weeks. And
yeah, he ruined Christmas for us. That was right around Christmas week.
And he just imploded. And around here at Footballers, we love Stafford. Like, he's been a favorite for a long time. But Cincinnati's been pretty fortunate throughout the playoffs to force turnovers. I've already mentioned that Stafford, you know, that's what he did during the year. Like, it was either like feast or famine in some of those games. So how are you projecting Stafford, knowing this game is kind of, we like the under?
Yeah, I think I'm probably not going to play a lot of captain quarterback in general on this slate because there's guys that can separate so easily on both sides of the ball. We just talked about it, you know, with Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. And then the obvious one is Cooper Kupp. Like, I think they're both fine flex plays. And when you think about the under hitting, again, one quarterback lands in the lineup optimally almost every time. So if you're playing one and you're playing to the under, it's probably not that Matthew Stafford's coming out and throwing 350 and four touchdowns. You know, in those scenarios, of course, he'd be the optimal captain. But I think, like you said, a realistic outcome is 250 to 300 yards and a couple of touchdowns. Like, that seems pretty safe. We also know, based off historical data, that the Vegas favorite quarterback tends to land in the optimal lineup more often than the underdog. So if the Rams are getting there, you know, via their passing attack, Stafford is clearly going to be a part of it. And I think it makes sense to include him in flex, you know, spots if you're playing cash games on this slate. If you're nutty like that and you want to play cash on this, go for it. But yeah, I'll have exposure to Stafford for sure, mostly as a flex though this week.
It's interesting when you think about how you're constructing your lineup with the Rams, because there is clearly one player on the Rams that everyone loves, right? It's Kupp. So if you're playing Kupp in that captain spot, you're going to correlate him with Stafford, okay? That's just like what's going to happen. So those two feel so tied together where you can't really say the same thing on the Bengals side. Like, there's, you know, two or three options that you could go for. So with Stafford, if you're saying, I don't want to play him in the captain spot as much, but I'm projecting the Rams to win, where else can we go other than Kupp? I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah, so what I think is kind of interesting is if you are going to build like a 4-2 or 3-3 is fine to do. We're not saying don't do it. It's just that you shouldn't, it shouldn't be your only approach if you're playing multiple lineups. But like in those scenarios, like what if, you know, what if the Rams come out and all of their production is via Matthew Stafford's arm through the air, but it's, you know, Cooper Kupp and he goes 9 for 90 or something, you know, which is just ho-hum for him. He'll land in the flex spot as an optimal play for sure. But like, what if OBJ goes, you know, 5 for 80 and two touchdowns? Like, that's a spot where I think you can kind of get some leverage and still have exposure to Kupp and Stafford, but that the touchdowns go to another wide receiver. And I think if I'm picking one, it would clearly be Odell based off his usage around the goal line and his recent role and great play, honestly, over the last month of the season.
Yeah. So on FanDuel, I was adding this up, Kupp plus Stafford, because you're not, you know, you're not paying the salary, you know, multiplier. It's 53% of your salary. But from there, you can still like jam in a bunch of studs for the Bengals. But I plan on being underweight overall on Stafford for MVP, like on FanDuel. But based on me liking the Rams and them winning, he's probably he is the favorite to win the MVP, like in terms of the award. So it just felt really weird when I was projecting this from a DFS perspective. And then to a awards perspective, it's like, well, Stafford's clearly the favorite. They're favorite to win. It's the quarterback. That's what happens. So that's where we're not mixing what happens in real life football and DFS. But yeah, right now I'm underweight on Stafford in terms of in the captain spot. But as a flex, he feels like a optimal play that just feels really easy to project because Akers has been so inefficient. Like, if we knew that Akers was in a spot that he was, you know, guaranteed 20 touches and at least 80 yards, like he's struggling just to get to that kind of mark, then it would be different. But like, Stafford feels so much safer where Akers is a true conversation. So that's kind of where I wanted to go into next before the wide receivers. What do we do with Cam Akers, who has defied all odds of even being on the field?
Yeah, he's been super fun to talk about and kind of write about on the site and all those things with just this incredible recovery from his Achilles surgery. But the reality is he just hasn't been himself. You know, he's not back to 100% yet. You look at the underlying metrics, clearly that's not there. He's been really inefficient. And again, it's a small sample, so it could be one of those sort of things too. And also two like really difficult matchups that he's played in recently with the 49ers and then a couple of weeks ago as well in the playoffs. You know, these types of situations with players that are priced at 6,400, where he's going to touch the ball, you would probably project him, what would you say, like around 15 touches or so is kind of a safe floor for
him? That's kind of like where his medium outcome is.
He's going to project insanely well in optimizers, which is really tricky because it's a nice tag. Volume is king at running back position, but I would like to be underweight again based off his inefficiencies that we've seen so far. And we also have to just kind of mention quickly, like Daryl Henderson could be back in the lineup this week. We don't know. I don't think he's going to touch the ball a ton, but if he mixes in for 3-4 touches, you know, adding in some work for Sonny Michel, it's tough to see an optimal ceiling outcome from Cam Akers. Certainly he can get there. I'll have a little bit of Cam Akers captain, but it's not going to be something I'm building around this week for sure.
One of the things I was toying around with, and I mentioned it last episode, is Akers and Kupp have been pretty negatively correlated because Kupp's been so good. Like, he actually hurts his own teammates in a way where it's like, you kind of have to take Kupp's correlation and put it in its own category because it's just been so insanely good all year long. When I'm building lineups, though, I've noticed that if I'm putting Kupp in the captain, then Akers is one of those players where it's like, I don't know if I want him. If I'm saying that, I'm saying the Rams are rolling and they get to 30 plus points and Akers scores and Kupp scores at least once. Like, that's what I have to be saying. But if this game hits the under, do you feel like if Kupp's in your lineup, Akers is probably a no, or vice versa, you're saying you might not play Kupp?
If Akers is a captain, well, let me just back up for a sec. The Rams are a team that will modify their play calling based off how the game is going. So looking at what they're doing when they're trailing, 70% pass rate. If you're building a game script where the Cincinnati Bengals get out to a lead, Cam Akers should not be in your lineup. However, if you project this game to be low scoring by chance and or the Rams to roll by more than, you know, a touchdown, like they're going to hand the ball off to Cam Akers a ton. So I don't think it's the craziest idea in the world to have a couple lineups with Akers at captain. Play it as a low-scoring game. Maybe you mix in a defense and a kicker and don't play Kupp. I don't think that's the craziest thing in the world. It's not the optimal play by any means. But again, on a one-game slate, things can get weird. So I think it's viable for sure if you want to talk about more of a game theory type of aspect of this. But yeah, from a real-life football perspective, it's been kind of tough sledding.
I was writing this in the Pace of Play article, and I said, if Cooper Kupp busts, which is a scenario I wrote out, like this is what happens if he busts, you will be the only person at your Super Bowl party rooting against this man because everybody loves Cooper Kupp, loves what he did for fantasy this year. But there is a scenario, like you mentioned, where he doesn't pay off his salary. And that's the chance that I would use Akers. So as I was typing that out, Cooper Kupp bus, I felt like I was just a complete idiot. But there is a scenario where it's one game and you need to understand that outcome. If you're building a lineup, you're not putting Kupp in every single lineup because he projects so well a medium outcome. You're saying, here's what could happen. And the under is the scenario where that happens. But man, Cooper Kupp catching a touchdown is like, you know, it's weird that it's expected to happen. He's the highest odds or the best odds on this slate. Anything about Sonny Michel we should worry about?
It's so tough, you know, because like if you're not excited about Cam Akers, you shouldn't really be excited about Sonny Michel either, especially because we project him to be more of the second fiddle, I guess, in the Rams backfield. So again, he's kind of fine to mix into player pools, but it's more game theory aspect than anything.
Yep. I've got him in as a player where, you know, you can project maybe five rush attempts if this game hits the under, and could he fall into the end zone? Totally possible. but it's not likely. So he's more of just a differentiator if you're just trying to get different and, you know, maybe something happens to Akers. But we can't project any of those things. Wide receivers. So we got Kupp, we got OBJ, and we got your boy Van Jefferson. I know how much you like Van Jefferson so much. Let's talk about Kupp first, and then we'll somehow end up at Jefferson. He's projected to be 20%+ as captain. That's a lot for a wide receiver. That's an extreme amount. Last year, I mentioned Mahomes and Brady were the easy choices, and then you kind of got to mix it up. Like, oh, do I want Tyreek? Do I want Kelsey? Do I want Mike Evans? Like, there were many more choices to be contrarian, but Kupp almost like has to come through for the field because he's so popular. So how are you handling him knowing the field loves him?
There's nothing negative to say, obviously. Just look at his box scores. It's insane. And looking at the matchup too, like during the regular season, Cincinnati allowed the third most 20+ yard completions. It seems like Cooper Kupp gets loose for a 35 yard gain at least once a game. So honestly, I don't think he's projected high enough. Like if the field's going to play him, let's say at 25%, I am very comfortable coming in at 35% captain exposure or something like that. Like he just has an insane ceiling that I don't think anyone truthfully on the Rams side can even touch based off how they play. So I like that spot for Kupp. Obviously, he's been great. The only question, like you said, is just how do you approach your lineups that have him? Because if you're playing him at captain, which is fine to do, you can't also be playing the other chalky plays. You know, you can't also probably be playing like on the Bengals side. We're seeing that Perine is going to be very popular as a salary-saving option. I would not do that in the same lineup to get different, for sure. I also think if you're playing Cooper Kupp at captain, we often talk about stacking it with the quarterback, as you said, with Stafford. But let's say that Stafford, you know, only throws one touchdown. Let's say the Rams only score one touchdown, and it goes to Cooper Kupp. And this game is a weird 10-3 sort of situation. Like, there's outcomes where Cooper Kupp is still the optimal captain without Stafford. So it's not the quote-unquote correct play when you're talking about how often it happens, but it does happen. And I think my lean is that I'm scared of Kupp not being in my captain spot. So I'll figure out how to get different at other spots in my lineup.
If you haven't noticed the way that Betts was just describing it, like you painted a picture of 10-7, and I honestly went, yeah, I could see that happen. Like, there's so many different game scripts in a one game sample size that could work. And so if you're one of those people that are like, oh, well, you know, I'll just build all the different lineups. Like, you can't build all of the lineups in even the 150s. Like, if you're maxing them out, you could go to just that game script Betts talked about and said, it hits the under massively. Kupp could be the optimal guy. Maybe Stafford ran in the touchdown. Like, there's just so many different ways that you could do it. So I know with him on FanDuel, where he's $16,000, which is just crazy expensive for a wide receiver, you're looking for him, like in our projections, what I saw, it's like one and a half times his output is like 30 points. That's like how good his projections are, is 30 points is just his medium outcome. So I'm finding game scripts where Kupp goes bananas, and I'm building around this in a way that says this is hurting people on the Rams from hitting their ceiling outcome. So OBJ, I'm probably going to be, you know, lower on him if Kupp is my guy. Probably going to be a little bit lower on Van Jefferson if that's the case. I still like Kendall Blanton. I think he's a good play that you can mix in. He's cheap enough. He's a lot more expensive on FanDuel, but he's cheap enough where, you know, you could do that. But we talked about Kupp and Akers. So is OBJ one of those players that, you know, he's been on a roll in the playoffs. I feel like the media has come around to him and said, hey, this guy's good again. So where are you at on OBJ, and would you use him as a contrarian captain?
I think you definitely can. I mean, he's been solid, right? And I think what we're chasing with the captain spot is touchdown upside. And we've talked about that on last week's show where we were talking about like correlations, and we said, you know, Higbee, when he hits a ceiling, Odell does not. And the reason is they both are just kind of have been more touchdown dependent. Now, that's kind of the old story. The new story is like he's getting more and more acclimated to be a focal point of this offense behind Cooper Kupp, obviously. But he's been good, man. 23 targets in the playoffs, 19 catches, over 10 yards per target, extremely efficient. And I think if you're talking about this again from like a what happens in a football sense, like clearly Cooper Kupp is the game plan. So the Bengals should be focusing on trying to take him away. Or maybe not take him away, but slow him down. And it could leave Odell in a lot of one-on-one coverage or softer matchups. So Yeah, I think Odell is someone I definitely want to have in my player pool. I think he's a contrarian captain for sure in those lineups. I certainly think I want Stafford in a, as a flex, because when you're getting Odell to hit a ceiling, he's got to score a touchdown. And I think that in those scenarios, Stafford's probably having a pretty good game. So that's my approach on Odell. I think I'm going to be pretty even with the field, though, on him. I don't have a strong take either way.
I think I will use Odell in lineups where I'm projecting this game to hit the over. Like, that's where I like him more, to rack up even more volume. He's not the same yards after the catch guy that we saw early in his career, the deep, you know, kind of receptions. Like, he's not getting those targets. He is getting red zone targets. That's why he's been so valuable. So, yeah, I'm using him in lineups where I say this game hits the over, Stafford throws three touchdowns, and let's say that OBJ gets at least one of those. That's where I'm going to use him. But let's finish off with Van Jefferson. I know he's your boy because you guys are basically cardio bros together.
Yeah, I mean, Van Jeff, you know, he's been getting a lot of cardio in out there, just running his routes, not seeing targets. And he's a guy that the field loves to play, especially you, Kyle. You love to play him. In all seriousness, like, it's the same conversation every week. Is he going to catch a deep bomb or not? And it's just, we can't tell you if he is or not. It's just been so tough to have him hit that ceiling outcome. So, yeah, it's like if Cooper Kupp is going to be doing his thing, getting targeted on every other play, and then Odell is starting to gain a role, and Van Jefferson is on the injury report with a knee issue, which he was also questionable, by the way, in the conference championship game. So it's a lingering thing. Like, yeah, he's fine in your player pool, but how can you get excited about it?
I'm going to be overweight. I'll say it right now. I'm going to be so overweight and so fat for Van Jefferson. I mean, here's the thing. Okay, he was limited. Still saw 87% of the snaps, 90% the week before. That's enough for me in one game to say, if I need to take a stance, if the field's not on him, I get it. This is more a game theory thing. And so I will take the advantage knowing that the field doesn't really want much to do with him. We know he can catch a long bomb. Like, we've seen that a couple times this year. And that's really a differentiator. Ooh,
the dog does not like that. Not
Dang
a big
it.
Van Jefferson guy.
Gosh, not even at 7K. He's 7K on FanDuel. I think that's where he's a better play if you want to use him as a flex. man, so it's just me on Van Jefferson Island, huh?
Well, like, so I guess my thing is, if are you going to play him in lineups with Cooper Kupp too?
If this, like I said, if there's a game scenario where this hits the over and I like Stafford to get like three touchdowns, then I don't think Kupp's going to get all of them. I'm going to find the other Rams pass catcher that, you know, catches the touchdown. And let's say he does catch like a 40 or 50 yarder. I think he's the player that can do it. So that's where I'm at right now.
Okay. Fair enough.
Nice. One more Rams wide receiver we need to talk about, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name because I'm going to screw it up yet again. How do you say his name again? Ben S.
Go back to last week's show for Kyle's attempt at pronouncing this. It was fantastic.
Skoronek. Skoronek?
Nope. Nope.
Swarnik.
Nope. I believe the common pronunciation out there is Skoronek.
Skoronek.
Skoronek. Skoronek is how I've heard it pronounced.
$600 on DK. Is that going to make him more popular than he should be? Because people are weird with DFS and they'll chase what they saw was a deep target last game.
I don't think a lot of people are actually going to play him very much. I kind of looked around the industry. Like, most people are kind of projecting him around like 8 to 12% total, not in captain, just total. So I actually don't think a lot of people are going to play him. Now, there's nothing really positive to say. He's just more of a salary saving option. You can jam into stacks with Stafford and you're just hoping he catches a touchdown. Honestly, that's all you can say.
Are you saying that you and your dog like Ben S more than Van?
No, I do not. I don't like either of these guys.
Oh my.
Personally, I would like to, I'll take the contrarian approach. I'll take Cooper Kupp on the Rams.
All right, that's fine. I'll fade him just like I should. All right, let's finish with tight ends and defense for the Rams side, and we'll jump into some props. So Tyler Higbee is unlikely to play with MCL sprain. Not a doctor, but it would shock me if he was on the field. Am I right?
Yep.
Okay. So knowing that, I'm approaching this game as if Kendall Blanton is playing and he's going to see the full allotment of snaps. He's, I think, a really good play on DK at 4,600. And then on FanDuel's 8,000, it's a different conversation. But The Bengals all year allowed a ton of production to the tight end position, the fifth most yards, the fourth most catches. Knowing that that's available, knowing you're going to get a ton of snaps, I mean, I feel like he's light years ahead better than your boy Drew Sample, who's only $400 cheaper.
Yes, please. Definitely with you on that. And he's an athletic guy. Like, they were designing plays for him a couple weeks ago to get the ball in his hands. So, yeah, give me Kendall Blanton over Drew Sample 10 out of 10 times. And I agree with you. Nice tag. Fits the lineup construction pretty well. And actually, surprisingly, not coming through as, like, super, super popular. Maybe that could change once we get the official, you know, status of Tyler Higbee if he's out. But based off of how it stands now, I definitely am interested in some Kendall Blanton.
Not a sentence we thought we would be saying to end the year.
That was not in our best ball primer, by the way.
Kendall Blanton did not make it. He just sadly, the final cut. We had to cut him out of the group. All right, Rams defense is going to carry a pretty healthy roster percentage because of the names, right? The big names we know, Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey. Like, those are the names the public sees. And the Rams can get after the quarterback. Joe Burrow obviously can take a sack like the best in the world. He's the best at taking sacks this past year. I just want to take a shot.
Sadly.
That was a kind way to tell the man he was bad at something. The offensive line of Cincinnati has kind of been a constant story. Okay, so how are we treating the Rams defense if we like this game to hit the under? It feels like that would be the obvious play, especially if the field's, you know, also thinking this game hits the under.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to get up there as far as popularity. I know it's not coming through as that right now, but I think the take home, and everyone knows this, is the Bengals offensive line is bad. The Rams defensive line is good. So let's play the Rams defense. And if they get up to like 30-35%, like, I would gladly want to come in underweight on that just to kind of fade the narrative. Though on like the NFL level, from a real football standpoint, it is an awesome spot for a Rams defense that was really good at getting after the quarterback this year. You just talked about it. No one was sacked more in the regular season than Joe Burrow. We remember that 9-sack game against the Titans. And last week, he was pressured, Joe Burrow was, 16 times, just 1 sack. So if you think regression hits in any way there, like, the Rams have a path to success in this spot on defense. So yeah, I'll certainly have exposure to them. But we also know, like, we're not good at projecting defensive scoring. So if the field thinks that they're on this and they know what's going to happen on the defensive side, I'm happy just to come underweight because we know that we're not good at projecting that.
I'm right there with you. And then last thing I'll just mention about Matt Gay, he's cheaper than McPherson. He's obviously going to come in lower despite being a favorite. So I will be relatively to the field overweight on Matt Gay just because the field is, I think, not as high on him when they should be. They're favorites. So all of that to say, we broke down the game in probably every single way possible. Give me your Vegas pick.
I feel like this is contrarian at this point. Everyone that I listen to or you see on social media, it's like Bengals plus the points, Bengals plus the points. I like the Rams. I think the Rams win by a touchdown.
You know, well, you know where I'm at. I'm obviously not in the Bengals. I have taken Rams money line plus an under. Put those together. It's at plus 170 on DraftKings. Ooh. So I'll be rooting for the Rams and rooting for no fun during this game. But yeah, I think the Rams win this one outright, and you took -4. I think that's totally fine. I feel better about the money line because I don't know. Anyway, when I compare that together, that's just where I'm at. All right, let's talk about some player props.
Straight cash, homie.
You know I'm in off-season mode when I've used the same exact drop 2 times on this show. But
I didn't even notice. How bad is that?
That's great. So let's quickly go through a couple props. We mentioned some of these last week. At quarterback, I like Burrow under 36.5 pass attempts, and that's gone down since then.
Yes, it is currently at 35.5.
So moving the lines, no big deal. And what do you like with Burrow?
Yeah, this is one that we talked about last week. Give me the over 10.5 rushing yards. The theory here is, you know, we've seen Burrow in the last week be able to escape pressure and pick up yards with his legs. Now, I think there's no doubt he'll be under pressure. Whether he escapes the sacks or not, I'm not sure. But 10.5 feels pretty low for a quarterback who we've seen it before. And I think if the Bengals win this game, it's because Joe Burrow is pulling off some incredible plays. So I will take over 10.5 rushing yards. Think he can get it done.
All right, I'm going to take a weird one at running back. I already took Sony Michel over 4.5 rush attempts. He had 10 last time in the NFC Championship game. I think there's a lot of different paths for him. Like, I'm not projecting him to have a huge game, but there's paths for him to see at least 5 rush attempts in this game, especially if we like the under and if we like the Rams to win. So I will just lean into the fact, let's say Akers goes off a drive, he gets some red zone work. You know, if Akers gets hurt, there's just paths for this to happen. So I will take over 4.5 rush attempts.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Sticking with running backs, I'm going to go under actually on both of the rushing props. Cam Akers, we talked about it last week, under 64.5. I also found a rogue 68.5 out there on one book. Hammered the under on that one. So give me the under on Akers. Here's the rationale for this. He has been insanely inefficient. It is a decent matchup. However, here's the number of times he has hit this mark since he came back from his Achilles injury. 0. I'll wait till it happens in this spot. And like you said, it correlates exactly with the Sony Michel prop. If we expect Michel to take some work, it's going to take away from Akers. So give me the under there. And then I also like the under for Joe Mixon. You know, he's just been a guy that, like Akers, has been inefficient. Here's his yards per carry since week 13. 2.8, 3.2, 3.4, 3.6. Okay, we're trending up. 3.8, 2.8, 3.9, 4.2. So he's been a guy that just hasn't really gotten it done. His prop is at 68.5. He's cleared that twice in 8 games over the last 2 months. The one time he did it as well, 65 yards. So he cleared it by 1.5 yards. So give me the under there.
All right, at wide receiver, we kind of mentioned earlier, a bit lower on Ja'Marr Chase. I took the under on his 5.5 receptions because of the way that the Rams play defense. It's scary to fade Ja'Marr Chase. I'm not fully fading him, but I will take under that. We've seen games where he, you know, caught 2 or 3 balls and that was it. But I do have an over on his rush yards. I don't know how you feel about this, Betts, but over 3.5 rushing yards. He's had 5 rush attempts in 3 playoff games. It seems like they want to get him in. And so give me 4 rushing yards.
Love it. I'm in.
Wow, I didn't have to talk you into that one. I thought that with Chase, it would just be tough because you can just see these monster. I thought about his yardage total, but I'm like, I'm terrified of his yardage total. That could change in one play. But I'll take under on the receptions. I do have a weird under one. Okay, so go with me here. Odell Beckham. You've heard of him.
Yes, great guy.
Under 9.5 yards on his first reception. Okay, so going back through game logs, just doing some intense work. He's hit this total once this year. Okay. His first catches, they've kind of get him involved in the game. He's actually showed up as the like first guy catching the ball for the Rams more than Cooper Kupp since he joined the team. Like, they're just getting these short little outs, but they've been under 9 yards on all of them except for one. So I will take the odds on that at plus money.
I can't wait for that first play to be like a 25 yard out. Can't wait for it. No, I think that's a great bet, actually. At the wide receiver position, there's not much to say. If we think Cooper Kupp has a great game here, I'm going to just not play any of his like receiving stuff or touchdowns. Like, just give me MVP at plus 600. I'm just going to hope that he goes off and has an awesome game, gets the MVP. He also could be involved, too, in like punt returns, kick returns, if they need to get the ball in his hands. He returns one, like that kind of thing. So, yeah, give me Cooper Kupp here, plus 600.
Yeah, and what you're saying with that is, yes, you can go through his props of receiving and, you know, touchdown score, but like the better odds, if he has a good game, is to just say he's going to win MVP.
Yep, exactly.
I wish there was tight ends one because I would just bet the tar out of some of them, especially Kendall Blanton. But because we don't know, the books have kind of removed that with Higbee and Uzama's status up in the air. I did look at my boy Mitchell Wilcox to score a touchdown. Not nearly high enough for me to actually jump in on it.
What's the line you would need for that bet?
Give me plus 10,000. Come on, man. This guy's a nobody. Okay, I'll share the big one. Everybody basically in our company here at Fantasy Footballers has taken an over on Cincinnati having over 1.5 field goals, okay? So all you need to do is, if you're watching the game and there's a field goal, you will be the only person cheering at your party, but we will all be cheering at Fantasy Footballers headquarters. So 2 field goals from Evan McPherson, that's all we need, and our company's set for life.
Yeah, literally the company's well-being rides on Evan McPherson's right foot.
So if you care about fantasy footballers, you care about fantasy football at all, and the future of fantasy football is at stake with two field goals.
Yes. Let's go, Evan. Sticking on kind of the kicker defense realm here, I took Aaron Donald over 4.5 total tackles. So that could be a solo sack, an assist, something like that. It just has to total 5 or more. Here's the rationale for this. We know since the offensive line is the weakness, but just look at the game logs. 9 of his last 11 games, he has hit this. In the last couple of weeks, he's been under, which I think is why this line is low. But in a plus matchup, an absolute superstar who can clearly be a game breaker, like, this is the spot for Aaron Donald. So give me over 4.5.
It's you said over 4.5 for tackles plus assists?
Yes.
Okay, cool. No, no big deal. I'm not betting that on air at all. at minus 105.
Ooh, I love it. Even better juice than what I put on the doc. I put minus 115. Did it move to 105?
I guess so, but I'll take it over 5 with you, Betts. Yeah, and then you have a couple of weird ones. You throw it out there before we get to our weird parlay.
Yeah, so real quick, total kickoff returns in the game under 5.5. It is kind of juicy, minus 160. The rationale is that the Rams return it out of the end zone at just 13% this year, very low. Evan McPherson, at a very high rate, is kicking it into the end zone or through the end zone. So I think we see under 5.5 total returns on that. And I want to point out real quick that Sean McVay is a great coach, but that man makes some silly decisions in regards to his challenges and when he uses a timeout. I got a prop for him to be the first coach, or the Rams rather, to be the first team to call a timeout at minus 125 on DK. This also counts if he calls a challenge and it is incorrect and they get penalized by getting a timeout removed. So give me the Rams to be the first team to use a timeout this week.
You are a crazy, crazy man to think that. But speaking of crazy, you and I kind of put our heads together and had a giant parlay, and I'll go through it really quickly. But our odds on this are plus 3,500. So this is a wild bet, but it's something to live for, right, Betts?
Yes. Listeners, if you want to ride with us, write this down, put it in. We'll all sweat it together.
All right. So here quickly, we have over 230 passing yards for Joe Burrow. We have under 89.5 rushing yards for Cam Akers, who we already said, not too efficient. At least 2 sacks for the Rams. Joe Burrow to hit at least 9 rushing yards, which Betts already has the over on that. The Rams to win, money line. T. Higgins to go over 74.5 receiving yards. Cooper Kupp to score a touchdown. The Rams to win the first half. And this game to hit the under of 48.5. What could go wrong?
This is a stone cold lock. I don't see how this misses.
All right. Well, if we win, we'll do something cool with it. How about that?
Sounds good to me.
It also could be over at halftime if the Bengals are winning. So
definitely.
How about that? All right. A couple of mailbag questions.
Mailbag.
Thank you for sending in your mailbag questions all year long. It's an honor and a privilege just to do this with you guys. So I'm at Kyle_Borg on Twitter. Betts is at the Fantasy PT. And this is what we do. This is our jobs. Like, we get to actually talk through fantasy football, talk through DFS strategy all year. So feel free to message us on Twitter, even if we take a big break for just a month. So the first one is from John Rentau on Twitter. He says, as a small budget player who feels like taking a couple of dart throws at the Millie Maker, so like 5 entries, what strategy would you use? And I'll just say this. We usually say, don't do this. Like, don't throw your money away. It's Super Bowl. Do it. Like, if you want to put 5 entries on the Millie Maker, go for it. So any strategy you would use for some dart throws?
Yeah, in those large field tournaments, and we're not talking like 1,000 people, we're talking like an insane number of people, you have to hit the nuts. Like, your lineup has to be perfect. So in a small field setting, like, it's possible that Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine get there in the same game. In a large field type of situation, you need to be thinking really hard about how each player hits a ceiling. So I would not be playing, you know, same running backs together on the same team in the same lineup, that sort of thing. I'm probably not going to be playing, you know, like Jamar Chase at captain and T. Higgins at flex. Like, it's unlikely that Chase has the ceiling and T. Higgins also gets there enough to pay it off, if that makes sense. So I think just be mindful of who you're playing at captain, how they reach a ceiling, and how it affects the other players in your lineup.
Yeah, you just need to go hard in the paint for a couple of different players and they hit. So I mentioned Mitchell Wilcox, $200. That changes the roster construction of your lineup if you have a player like that. Ben gosh, I'm going to get this, Skoronek.
Nope.
Dang it. That guy.
You'll get it. You'll get it next season.
Yeah. If he's in the NFL, $600, those are the kind of players you need. If you're saying, hey, I want to get really weird and you're not playing Cooper Kupp. Like, let's say you didn't have Cooper Kupp or Ja'Marr Chase in your lineup. That is a weird lineup already, right? Compared to the rest of the field. So those are the kind of stances, shoot your shot. Go for it. It's Super Bowl time, so might as well go for it. All right, next one is from @Trev_Arnold. On FanDuel, how do you guys approach doing 150 max entry contests? Obviously, trying to get exposure to everything, but once you have that and certain game flows, then what do you do? And I'll just say this. On FanDuel, there's only 5 guys in your lineup. There's no salary restriction or salary multiplier. So you have a lot of duplicates. And so I use Optimizer. I create rules personally. But yeah, I'll just say FanDuel is really hard to get different. I don't love the format for Showdown nearly as much.
Yeah, and to be truthful, I don't really play on FanDuel for Showdown at all. And it's for that reason that you described. But just thinking through like a general 150 max strategy, regardless of the site that you're playing is, you know, you can use an optimizer. You can set your exposure levels that you want. And I think the best way to do this is like look at the DFS pass, look at the roster percentage projection, and then you can decide, like, is the field sharp on this? Are they overweight? You know, are they too high on a player? Are they too low on a player? And you can change your exposures that way. And then as well, you know, there's going to be guys that you like personally that you're like, I want to play this guy. I believe in it. You know, that's fine. And I think maybe kind of going a little bit overweight in those scenarios in a 150, you don't have to get a bad lineup out there to do that if you want to kind of get different that way. So I think it's totally fine to do. And again, use that optimizer if you're doing 150 and really make sure that you kind of have those exposures set in the right way.
Yeah, the optimizer is going to pull in a lot of players that, like Cam Akers, because he projects so well. Like, he's just going to keep showing up in optimals. But if you're doing 150, you got to get different. Last one is from dPorsche15. How are you guys handling kickers in DST? And I think I just want to follow this up, Betts. Do you need to give kickers their rightful respect this week out of all weeks?
It's a kicker week, man. I think a lot of people are talking about kickers for the Super Bowl, which I don't think normally happens. And Kyle is so happy. He's leading this this trend in the media. But how I'm handling it is I'm setting a rule. If I am playing a defense, I'm only playing one of them. If I'm playing a 5-1 lineup, I have that defense in that lineup. And then if I'm playing a kicker, again, it's just one kicker in the lineup for me. I'm not doing two.
Yep. That's my main thing I mentioned earlier, but I will be playing probably a little bit more Matt Gay than the field does. So we'll, in a roster percentage report, we'll be talking about that. But yeah, I just think that the field's not as onto the fact that they're the favorites and he's cheaper for some reason. And then for DST, the Bengals are the wild card in this because I don't really know what to do with them. Like, because the Rams project as the favorite, because, you know, you're basically saying, are there going to be turnovers? And the Bengals have kind of been lucky, if we're honest, in the playoffs with some of their turnovers. Like, going back through these three games, like, there's turnovers that shouldn't have happened that have bounced off people's hands or, you know, those kind of things. You can't really project those. So I'm lower on the Bengals. I'm going to be at where the field is for the Rams. And then pretty much a little bit higher on Matt Gay. But that's probably where I land on that. But yeah, if you want to play with us for the very last time this year, you can go to ballersdfs.com. It will direct you to our DraftKings League. I will make sure that I open up some contests that are some big ballers contests. I'm talking big money. You'll probably get to play a little bit with Andy, Mike, and Jason as well. And those contests are, for Betts and I, super fun all year to have you guys and have people that, hey, for the first time, they feel safe. They feel comfortable playing with people that are in it with them as well. So yeah, make sure you go to ballersdfs.com if you want to play with us. And Betts, for the very last time this year, or at least for a month, sign us off.
Oh, man. What a year. What a year, dude. We did a ton of shows. Hopefully everyone loved it, was engaged with us all year. We appreciate you. Appreciate you playing with us in our listener league. It was so much fun. But again, we're off for a month. Time for a nap. We'll take a little break, and we're back with a vengeance here for 2022. We will see you guys in a month. Take care.
2 field goals!
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.thefantasyfootballers.com.